Welcome back into the Pick and Roll NBA podcast with Jet and Sap, presented by Full Press Coverage. Sap, when we last spoke on Monday, both of our teams, the Celtics and the Lakers, were staring down the barrel of a 3-0 hole. One of those teams has since been eliminated from postseason contention. That is the Los Angeles Lakers, as they fall to the Denver Nuggets in Game 4 in Los Angeles, in a close game, 113-111. LeBron James was fantastic, I thought, in that game, Sap, but it wasn't enough as the Lakers get swept. And you and I both picked the Lakers in this series. Shame on us. And Denver really showed why they were the one seed pretty much all year long, Sap.
Denver was the best team in the Western Conference from the get-go. They were the number one seed. The last 2 weeks of the regular season, they load managed, so it got a little bit tighter in the standings, but they were never threatened by Memphis or Sacramento in terms of the number one overall seed. They go out and take care of business against Minnesota in 5 games, Phoenix in 6, and then they sweep the Lakers. The Lakers, I would say, were good for about 80% of this series. I mean, they were in the games, and they had a 15-point lead early against Denver in Game 4. They had a double-digit lead in Game 3. You know, if they could hold on to both of those games, that series would be tied at 2, but they just couldn't finish it off. I think LeBron, we saw his numbers in the fourth quarter, pretty much through the entire postseason, let alone in this particular series. He ran out of gas. I mean, he's 38 years old, a lot of mileage on those legs. He was spectacular in the first half when he scored 30 points, 31 points. I mean, he looked like he was headed for a 50, 60-point game. When you're 38, you can't just finish it off like that. We saw that final drive that he was trying to tie the game with, whether it be a layup or, you know, kind of a little type of 4 or 6 foot shot. Just didn't have the elevation that he used to have. He used to just blow by people, overpower them. All of a sudden, he's got Jamal Murray trying to strip him and Aaron Gordon trying to block him. And he probably got fouled in that situation. And, you know, he hasn't always gotten those calls because he's a tough guy to officiate. But the Lakers, if it makes any sense, had a pretty good run getting to the conference finals. They got swept, but they never were embarrassed out there against Denver. But as LeBron said after the game, you know, I don't really get excited about going to the conference finals. He's all about winning championships, and they fell a couple of steps short. But again, you have to congratulate Denver because they were clearly the better team. Jokic played at a high level. Jamal Murray looked like Jamal Murray from the bubble a couple of years ago. And all of those role guys, whether it was KCP or Bruce Brown, obviously Aaron Gordon, Michael Porter Jr., those guys all stepped up and played well. Denver's going to be tough to beat, whether it's against the Heat or the Celtics in the finals, which start a week from tomorrow.
Yeah, absolutely. Denver, you know, really availed themselves well in this postseason and in this series against the Lakers in a series that, again, a lot of people were not picking them and didn't pick them against Phoenix. We picked against Denver consecutive rounds, Sap, even though you had Denver winning the championship at the beginning of the year. So, you know, I don't know. You were flip-flopping all over the place, my friend.
I'm like Nuggets. Charles Barkley, right? Barkley had the Celtics Heat series over at halftime yesterday. Now he's talking about that it's going to be a blowout in Game 5 and that the Celtics are going to go back to Miami down only 3-2 and all the pressure will be on Miami. Look, if I could make a tenth of what Charles Barkley makes doing this, I'd be quite happy. But sometimes you have to look at what's happening in front of you and you could change that opinion. I don't know what made me think that Denver was going to lose to Phoenix. I'm a slave to talent, and I always think that Kevin Durant is capable in a 7-game series of just being nearly perfect, and he was far from it. Devin Booker was outstanding in that series, but I think you got to give more credit here to Nikola Jokic, who's been the best player in this postseason, and maybe you relitigate that he should have won the MVP this year. Again, he missed most of the last 2 weeks of the regular season to get ready for the postseason. That may have cost him the MVP, but in the long run, that may lead to a championship for Jokic and the Denver Nuggets, whereas Embiid was all about going for the MVP, and he wasn't quite himself in that second-round series against the Celtics.
Yeah, and you know, I think you see Jokic getting talked about more on a national level because all these games have been in prime time, and maybe people aren't as familiar with his game as you should be, a player of his caliber. And so I think, you know, it's becoming more of a conversation. Like you just said, maybe he should have won MVP when people are realizing how good this guy actually is and how much he really affects the game in terms of making all of his teammates better. Triple-double in a closeout game 4, 30 points, 13 assists, 14 rebounds. You know, he added 3 blocks in that game too. Shot efficiently from the floor. So, you know, this is what he does pretty much night in, night out. And as far as the Lakers go, Sap, I think you put it accurately. They kind of ran out of gas, but this was a problem that sort of plagued them all year long, was finishing off games, in especially ones in which they had leads, more so before the trade deadline, before they, you know, sort of retinkered this roster. But still, it was an issue with them, and it crept up in this series against the Nuggets, in that they couldn't protect these leads late. Maybe it's their age. Maybe it's just the fact that the Nuggets are, you know, they ran into a team that was legitimately better than them. But it was something that did happen to the Lakers throughout the regular season, and it happened again at sort of the worst possible time for them.
LeBron was going to have to be perfect in this series, as was the case with Anthony Davis, and both fell short of that. Not that they played horribly, but, you know, if you're going to give out grades, especially on a curve with LeBron James and Anthony Davis, I'd give LeBron probably a B in this series and Anthony Davis a B minus. They had to be at an A minus A or even A plus level for the Lakers to compete in this series, and they just weren't there. And then I think what really put Denver over the top was Jamal Murray having a couple of just incredible games where, again, he looked like the Jamal Murray of the bubble. He's a great number two guy and works so flawlessly with Nikola Jokic. It's a nice combination. You get Jokic, the big guy who can also go out and hit threes and is one of the best passers in the sport. You get Jamal Murray, who can light up from three. He's streaky out there, but he can get really hot, and he also slashes well. And the whole team also played pretty good defense, which is obviously important and going to be good for them in the finals against either the Celtics or Heat. But yeah, you got to give Denver a lot of credit here. And again, as LeBron James wanted to do, he did make it about himself after game four.
Yeah.
When he kind of put it out there that maybe he's all done. He's not all done. He's not retiring. My two favorite athletes, current athletes, LeBron James and Aaron Rodgers, are the two biggest drama kings in all of sports. They love attention. And we've seen Aaron Rodgers every year when the season ends. Well, I'm not sure if I'm going to come back. I'll have to think about it. I'm going to have to go into a darkness retreat. And LeBron now is going to have to contemplate whether he retires or not. And I know there was one thing floated out there that maybe LeBron sits out the upcoming year, comes back the following year with whichever team drafts Bronny James. Well, that's kind of a tough inside straight flush to pull off, right? Because
right.
I'm still not sure how this works as far as the Lakers are concerned, because he is under contract. And does a 38-year-old guy take a full season off and then come back the next year? You know, what's going to happen with his skills? And let's say someone drafts Bronny, then LeBron says, well, I really don't want to go there. I mean, the perfect situation would be Cleveland drafts Bronny, LeBron goes back to Cleveland. Maybe there's some sort of compensation that goes to the Lakers, and Cleveland becomes a serious title contender with all that talent that they have on the floor. But that's, you know, well in the future. LeBron's not retiring. Why would he? He's playing still at an incredibly high level.
Yeah, no, he's not retiring. I mean, I was not surprised to hear him say that, because, like you said, he kind of likes, you know, he doesn't handle losing well, which he shouldn't. You know, he's won a lot in his career, and he's always has those high expectations for himself. But, you know, it was to hear him talk about retirement after coming off of just another fantastic season, and him saying for years and years now he wants to play with his son before he retires, it just came across as, you know, kind of, not petty is not the right word, but petulant, maybe. I'm not sure. Like, he couldn't help himself but to create another storyline. And again, he's not retiring. There's no way that's happening.
No, attention grabbing, you could call it that as well. Again, you take away a lot of the narrative about the Denver Nuggets, because what did Get Up lead with the next morning? Not that Denver swept the Lakers,
right.
Not that Denver is going to the first finals in their franchise history, and they've been in the NBA since 1976, and they've been a pretty successful franchise, right? I mean, they're always kind of there. They've had a lot of really great players, but
yeah,
they could never break through, because in the 80s, they couldn't beat the Lakers. You know, in the late 90s and through the 2000s, who did you have? The Lakers and the Spurs, and then the last decade's been the Warriors, so they can't quite break through. Well, finally, they've broken through here, and they're a fun team to watch. You know, a lot of ball movement. They share it. They get performances out of multiple players. It seems like everybody really accepts their role, and they're well coached by Michael Malone, and they deserve some credit here. I'm sure that ABC is not thrilled that the Denver Nuggets are going to be in the NBA Finals. I'm sure they're hoping the Celtics come back from a 3-1 deficit to add a little juice to the Finals if the Celtics are there instead of the Miami Heat. But look, Denver was the best team all year, and they deserve this.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Sap, before we head over to the Celtics, looking at the Lakers offseason, I'm sure we'll talk about it more as the offseason actually occurs. They have some decisions to make because they have some free agents to have to look at. Austin Reaves, D'Angelo Russell, Rui Hachimura, all guys that are going to be that played a big role in this second half of the season are all going to be free agents. And the Lakers have to decide if they want to go for depth or if they want to go big game hunting and try to go get maybe Kyrie Irving or Fred VanVleet. What do you think, Sap? If as a Lakers guy, because LeBron's on the team, what's the best direction for them going forward?
I'm all in favor of Kyrie Irving. I think obviously the guy is an extreme talent, and I think the only player in the league that can control him, at least I still think he can, is LeBron James. The only problem is LeBron couldn't control him in Cleveland as recently as 2017, and since then, Kyrie Irving's earned over $200 million in the meantime, and I think he's crazier than he was back in 2017. So he would be a handful, right, even for LeBron James. But a big three of LeBron, Anthony Davis, and Kyrie Irving would certainly be intriguing. I mean, there'd be nights where it would work and they would be unbeatable. There'd be other nights where it didn't quite click, or you'd have to worry about load management and durability because Kyrie's not exactly the most durable guy either. And to make that work financially, you may have to move on from Austin Reaves, Rui Hachimura. As far as D'Angelo Russell, goodbye. I mean, he was just a disaster in this postseason. Austin Reaves has become kind of a cult hero in Los Angeles. He's a really good player, though.
He is. You know, he's a very good player.
He's really good. I mean, you're talking about a guy who through the postseason averaged, what, 18 points, 6 rebounds, 4 or 5 assists.
Yeah, it's not a flash in the pan. 40s. He's a legitimate NBA player. Yeah.
He can play high 40s, low 50s on threes, which is exactly what LeBron needs because I want LeBron taking fewer threes, not more threes. It was a disaster there, especially in the fourth quarter in the postseason with LeBron taking threes. So, yeah, I mean, Kyrie Irving is obviously the sexy pick. And let's not forget the Lakers, who, you know, is a very valuable franchise, but they're not ones to go deep into the tax the way the Golden State Warriors have done it. So I don't know how much they're going to commit to, okay, we're going to sign Kyrie Irving and we're also going to keep Austin Reaves and Rui Hachimura and, you know, we'll add someone else. Like, so it's kind of one or the other. If they go with Kyrie Irving, then they're going to have to go fill out the roster with other guys. Or if they just stay organically and keep what they have, try to build from there with other guys. So it's going to be interesting to see what the Lakers do. I think Darvin Ham is going to be back next year. I mean, there's always rumors out there that when you coach the Lakers or the Celtics, you could be one and done, but I think he did a pretty good job this year. Held that team together after a 2-10 start, and they got to the conference finals. I know they got swept, but I think Darvin Ham availed himself quite well in his first year as a head coach.
I think so too. I think his job is safe. Obviously, you don't want to get swept in any round, and you know it is somewhat embarrassing for the Lakers to ever get swept. But yeah, I think he'll be back next year. And as far as some of the free agents, you know, Reaves and Hachimura earned themselves a nice little payday because they both played well in the postseason. And Reaves, by nature of being, I believe he was an undrafted player, Sap. Is going to be looking for whoever pays him the most money. You know, he's not going to give a hometown discount at this point in his career to the Lakers just to play in the Lakers. He hasn't earned money yet, so he's going to want to take the biggest contract that's possibly offered to him. And I'm sure he's going to take – it'll be a nice little contract for him that's gonna make the Lakers have to decide if they want to keep him or go get somebody else because they're not going to be able to bring him in and a Kyrie Irving. It's just they're not going to be able to afford it. It's going to put them way, way over the tax limit. And so they have some decisions to make. Like you said, Sep, it's sort of a depth versus star power thing. The Lakers, in their history, have sort of always opted towards the star power. Maybe Kyrie Irving's not the best fit in terms of a star power player, Sep. There's also rumors about them trying to trade for Trae Young. Is that a fit?
That would be interesting. Again, Trae Young, we always kind of think of him as Steph Curry 2.0. I think he's a better passer than Steph Curry. He's nowhere near Steph Curry as a scorer or as a shooter. Like, it's not even close. I think they need lockdown defenders and knockdown three-point shooters. I mean, look, I think every team in the league
needs that. Oh, yeah, so Kyrie Irving, not a lockdown defender right there.
Not at all, but a guy who is so creative offensively, and I think he does work well with LeBron, and I think he'd work well with Anthony Davis, that it would work. So that's what you really need. And again, Reaves and Hachimura, I think, did a really nice job defensively. Look, I'm still pining for KCP. Every time I watch the Nuggets beat the Lakers, I'm like, KCP, why did the Lakers trade you? along with Kyle Kuzma to bring in Russell Westbrook, and then you flip Westbrook for D'Angelo Russell. So nothing worked out there. I mean, if you have KCP and Kyle Kuzma on this current Lakers roster, I think they beat Denver because Denver wouldn't have KCP. And the Lakers, I think, would be advancing to the finals shortly. But, you know, they went all in on Russell Westbrook. To your point that they generally go in for stars, I think Kyrie Irving still has a lot left in the tank if his mind is there and he's committed. Two big ifs. So that's going to be interesting to see what happens in the offseason, because the Lakers, again, they kind of run their organization, as big of a brand as it is, they kind of run it like a mom-and-pop organization. It's somewhat similar to the Dallas Cowboys. Like, everyone thinks the Cowboys throw money around. They don't. Like, you know, in terms of actual spending, they're kind of middle of the pack in the NFL. Right. They don't overspend, even though they have the biggest brand in the NFL. And neither do the Lakers, even though they have the biggest brand in the NBA. And to some point, the Celtics, who kind of entered the, you know, luxury tax this year, but not to the point where the Warriors are at, have kind of been that type of franchise as well. Again, these are businesses people are running.
Yeah, and that's always, you know, the side plot that people need to focus on is that who are the owners, how much money do they have to spend, are they willing to do it, and so we'll have to see what the Lakers decide to do there, Sap, as the offseason. Should be an interesting offseason for them, but their season is over, and the Celtics season still somehow miraculously alive, Sap, after winning game four on the road in Miami. On the road, a place they've been much more comfortable this postseason than at home, 116-99, off the strength really of a terrific second half and a terrific third quarter, which has been not the case for the Celtics at all in this series. They've been horrible in the second half and in the third quarter in this series. Last night, they turned that all around, led by their star player, Jason Tatum, who was terrific. 33 points, 7 assists, 11 rebounds, 2 blocks, 14 of 22 from the floor, 4 of 9 from 3. And he also got contributions from all the starters were in double digits. Grant Williams put 14 off the bench, and that was enough to get it done last night. Jaylen Brown still doesn't look right, Sap. I mean, 17 points, 7 of 16 shooting. So the stats aren't bad, but still you're expecting a little bit more. Malcolm Brogdon was terrible last night. But again, Tatum, Smart, Horford, White, all good enough. And the Celtics have a little bit of life, though, you know, it's never happened in the NBA before, coming back from a 3-0 deficit. And I still do not believe that this Celtics team is the team that's going to buck history, but at least they gave Celtics fans something to feel good about in game four.
I would feel better about them pulling off a comeback if Jaylen Brown was playing the way Jaylen Brown is supposed to play. He was named second team All-NBA 2 weeks ago. The six games since, he's averaging 18 points, 6 rebounds, 3 assists, 3.5 turnovers. He's shooting 41% from the floor, 21% from three, and 67% from the free throw line, including two misses last night that looked like shots I would try to attempt from the free throw line.
What the hell is that? That was awful.
Horrible. Horrible. So he's not playing anywhere close to being a second team All-NBA player. And again, look, I like Jaylen Brown a lot. I'm not sure if I would go with the Supermax with him. I think he's a top 15-ish player. I know he made second team All-NBA. But he's in a pretty good situation in Boston, because when they lose and he's not that great, he doesn't get criticized all that much. Jason Tatum is the guy, as the best player on the team, that constantly criticized.
Yeah.
And you look at Jason Tatum, Jet, in his last 10 elimination games, going back a couple of years, last 10 elimination games, he's averaged 30 points, 9 rebounds, and 6 assists. Those are numbers that are pretty comparable to what LeBron does in elimination games or game sevens. LeBron in those situations is essentially 33, 12, and 9. You know, obviously better than Jason Tatum, but 39 and 6 in 10 elimination games, his most recent elimination games, those are great numbers, and everyone is constantly complaining about Jason Tatum. Now, the thing I was happy to see was Grant Williams, and we've been talking about this for 2 months. I'm not a huge Grant Williams fan, but he does serve a purpose, and I'm surprised that Joe Mazzulla hasn't embraced him more. Joe Mazzulla loves three-point shooters, and Grant Williams, he can hit three-point shots, right? He's essentially the last couple of years, a 40% three-point
deadly
shooter.
Corner three-point shooter. That's what he does.
Young P.J. Tucker, right? And he's versatile defensively. So this kid was benched at the end of the season, didn't play much really against Atlanta or Philadelphia. And then you dropped him out there in game two and said, go guard Jimmy Butler, and then he got punked a little bit because he got in Jimmy Butler's face. And good for Grant Williams, because someone had to get in Jimmy Butler's face.
Someone did.
It was going to be Jason Tatum or Jimmy or Jason Tatum or Jaylen Brown. So I mean, like, and this guy is a good defensive player, and he's versatile. He does know how to guard Bam Adebayo. I think they played against each other or with each other in high school. And look, if the Celtics pull this miracle off and get to the finals, he's driven Nikola Jokic crazy in head-to-head matchups because he's a guy who gets under some players' skin. So I'm glad to see Grant Williams. But the bigger point, can they pull this off? Look, they'd have to win three more games in a row, which they're quite capable of. If you tell me they're going to shoot 40% from the three-point line like they did last night, turn it over only 10 times, and play really aggressive defense, I like their chances, because that's what they need to do to win. It's nothing outrageous. It's something they're certainly capable of doing. If they do it again in game five, now the pressure's on Miami going back to South Florida in game six. The only problem with these two teams get together, Jed, it's like home court disadvantage. The last two seasons, they've played 11 games in the Eastern Conference Finals. The home team is 3-8. The last two postseasons, the Celtics are 10-11 at TD Garden, including 8-11 in their last 19. They're 13-6 on the road. So it's like,
it defies logic.
It makes no sense. Like, postseason, like, if you had that stretch in the regular season, you go, what's up with this team? Like, you know, are they not sleeping in their own beds, or what's going on? That's troubling, to be that bad at home. It's great that you're able to win on the road, but it's kind of mind-boggling that they're so good on the road and so bad at home. So, like Charles Barkley said last night, he thinks the Celtics will take care of business on Thursday night and get this thing back to Miami. And like I said, then the pressure's on the Heat to win game six.
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, Charles Barkley, every time he's picked the Celtics, they've lost. And every time he's picked Miami, they've won. The Celtics won. So I don't feel particularly good about Barkley's, you know, pick there. As far as the Celtics and what they did last night, yes, Grant Williams had a big impact on that game, and we were kind of like, why isn't this guy playing? I mean, is he the greatest player in the world? No, but he's not an end-of-the-bench guy. So for the Celtics, this is what they did well, and I tweeted this out last night, because they asked Jason Tatum, what'd you guys learn in after the game? And he said, oh, you know, to make Miss League, which I hate that answer. That's my least favorite answer in all of basketball. Doc Rivers used to say it all the time when he was the coach of the Celtics and they would lose games. Make Miss League. No. It's an effort league, especially in the postseason. Mm-hmm. Last night, what the Celtics did was they played good defense, which had been invisible for them for the first three games of this series. And then off of missed baskets or turnovers, they ran and they got fast break points, because that's what you have to do against a team that plays a zone defense, is you don't let them set up their zone defense. For God knows what reason, the Celtics in games 1, 2, and 3 were walking the ball up the court off of misses and turnovers. And Miami was setting up their defense and saying, oh, okay, thank you. So for the Celtics, transition is the key. If you're going to play good defense, then you need to score off of those transition opportunities. They did that really, really well last night. They also shot the three ball really, really well last night. A lot of that is because they were getting transition points, and it's a lot easier to score open three-pointers when everybody's collapsing on the basket and you can find wide-open shooters. So the Celtics did a lot better job defensively in transition, and that translates to easier shots. And again, on for Miami, what they were not able to do last night was be comfortable from the three-point line and take a million wide-open threes. The Celtics did a lot better job contesting those, and it showed. Miami came back down to earth. They shot just 25% from three last night, Sap. So I think the game plan is pretty clear for the Celtics, that play good defense with effort, and that can lead to turnovers and missed baskets, and then score in transition. I don't think it's that complicated, but their willingness to put in that effort, that's what's been in question in this series.
We both think it should start at the defensive end. Joe Mazzulla has talked all year that when they're hitting their threes, they play better defensively. To me, that's ass backwards, because no matter what, if you're hitting your threes or not, you can still give an effort on defense. Last night, the Heat, like you said, were what, 8 of 32 on threes after just being otherworldly the first three games from beyond the arc. The Heat were 2 of 24 on contested threes. So if you get out there, close in on their airspace, get a hand up, just contest it, play with some effort on defense. You know, we're talking about still Max Strus and Caleb Martin and Kyle Lowry, who's 112 years old. So we're talking about, you know, we're not talking about Steph Curry and Klay Thompson, right? I mean, like, that's different when Steph Curry hits five straight threes while you're draped all over him. You just tip your cap and say, well, he's the greatest shooter ever. Miami doesn't have that type of level of player, but when they're wide open, they're going to make threes. They're still NBA
players. Yeah, you
said
it last show, Sep. They're NBA players. You can't leave them wide open.
Right. They're undrafted free agents, but they're NBA players. I mean, if we saw them on the playground, we'd go, holy crap, those guys are incredible. So if you're leaving them wide open, then all of a sudden Caleb Martin's going to look like freaking Klay Thompson circa 2017, right? Like lockdown shooter. And the rest of these players that no one really knows much about, Gabe Vincent, Max Strus. Lowry's a different situation, obviously, but he's not the player he used to be. So if you start on the defensive end, obviously you can set up your own offense quicker, play with force. It doesn't mean you have to rush down and be Mike D'Antoni and try to get a shot off in 8 seconds and, you know, do that. But at least you can get into your offense and get into some type of flow. So they're not setting up their defense and not setting up these zone defenses, which give the Celtics all sorts of problems. What they were able to do last night was hunt out certain defenders, including Max Strauss, who gave up, I believe, 30 points when he was a primary defender on any Celtic player. Why would Eric Spoelstra play so much zone? Because he has some weak defenders.
Exactly.
Deep zone defense when you have, you know, Kawhi Leonard and LeBron James and, you know, Scottie Pippen and Dennis Rodman out there. You play man-to-man defense.
You play bad individual defenders.
Exactly. We used to do that in pickup games. We always played 2-on-3 because I couldn't defend anyone. So, you know, I'd be at the top there just waiting for the ball to bounce to me. And I was a good passer. That was my thing. They used to call me Tragic Johnson, not Magic Johnson. But I think that that's what you have to do is start in the defensive end, which the Celtics did, say, in game 6 against Philadelphia. Now, Philadelphia peed down their leg. I get that. But what was the score in game 6 at Philadelphia facing elimination? 95-86. Tatum didn't hit anything till the fourth quarter, but they played good defense and kept themselves in the game. If they weren't playing good defense last night, because they struggled offensively, especially in the first 2.5 quarters, they would have been down by 15, 18 points in the third quarter. You ain't coming back from that. But they always kept it manageable. The biggest lead that Miami had was 9 points. You can manage that because you go on a 18-0 run. All of a sudden, you flip a 9-point deficit into a 9-point lead, and now you've got total control of the ball game. But, yeah, start on the defensive end because that's the constant. I got so sick of hearing Joe Mazzulla all year talk about, yeah, if we're knocking down our threes, then the defense follows. It doesn't have to be that way. It shouldn't be that way.
It shouldn't. It's much easier to score when you're forcing turnovers because you're inherently you're getting mismatches on the other end. They're going to have to pick up defenders or are going to have to pick up players that they shouldn't normally be defending. You're going to have a numbers advantage. That's always going to lead to easier baskets. So, yeah, what you said at the beginning of this happens totally right. It's completely ass backwards, and it makes you really question Joe Mazzulla. But they did shoot their threes at a great clip last night. Like I said, 40%. They're very, very hard to beat when they hit that number from three. Eric Spoelstra said it in game 2, Sap, that that's the only way they can beat us. I don't believe that's true if the Celtics change their mentality to being a defensive team first and then worry about the three-pointers as a secondary thing. If they play great defense, Miami is going to have a much harder time beating this team. The problem with the Celtics this year is they have not been consistent on the defensive end at all. And this series, this was the first game of the first four games that they actually played defense, Sap. It was not nowhere to be found for three games. And then finally last night you saw it show up because this is a team that is very talented defensively. They just don't put in the effort all the time.
First three games, Miami was averaging 120 points per game. You hold them to 99. And again, Miami 2 of 24 in contested threes. That's about getting out there, getting a hand in the face of the shooter, clearing out his airspace so that he doesn't have comfort. This is what you have to do defensively. You just have to make them uncomfortable. It's no different than in football when you're rushing the passer. Okay, maybe you don't sack the quarterback 7-8 times in a given game, but if you are down, you know, near his knees, near his legs, making him uncomfortable, making him move in the pocket, resetting his platform, you're going to make even Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers, and all the great quarterbacks uncomfortable. If you let them sit there in a clean pocket, they're going to pick you apart. Well, even Max Strus and Caleb Martin and Gabe Vincent can hit 50% of their three-pointers when they're able to catch the ball, you know, take a look at the insignia on the ball and set it up and shoot it, and, you know, nothing but net. And the Celtics are out there trying to figure out what they're going to try to do defensively. Don't overcomplicate it. Like you said, this is the same roster that held Golden State to 104 points per game in the finals last year. Again, they didn't lose that series against the Warriors because of defense. They lost because of offense. I can't quite figure out why you can't still have an elite defense and an elite offense. It can be done. I'm sorry. It can be done. Golden State has done it for the last decade. You know, the Lakers did it with Kobe and Shaq, and I get it. It was a completely different NBA, but you don't have to look that far back to look at what Golden State did in winning four titles. You don't have to look too far back to see what Miami did when LeBron was there, winning two titles in 4 years. They were really good on both ends. The Celtics have the talent to do that, same as it was last year. And I think you've got Rob Williams healthier than he was a year ago, right? And Tatum and Brown should, in theory, be better defenders than they were a year ago. They're more experienced. And Derek White has elevated his defensive play. So it is kind of head-scratching and frustrating.
Yeah. So, I mean, obviously, like you said, if they are able to win the next game, it does put a lot of pressure on Miami. The problem is it would just be so fitting for the Celtics to lose at home to end their season, because they've been just dreadful at home in this postseason, Sap. So, you know, you mentioned that people will get really excited if they win game two. Win their second game of the series in this game five here. I don't know how you can feel confident or comfortable in the Celtics playing consistent at this point, because they just haven't throughout the postseason. They struggled against Atlanta at times. They struggled against Philadelphia at times. And okay, so we saw a glimmer of good basketball against the Miami Heat, but they've given you no indication they can do that consistently. And that's my problem with the Celtics. I do, however, Sap, think that winning just one game in this series has saved Joe Mazzulla's job. I don't love that, because I don't think he's ready to be a head coach of a team that's trying to win a championship, but I think he's Brad Stevens' guy. They were looking for any reason to keep him, and I think they gave him that reason last night. So I think that just one win in the series kept his job safe for next year. Unfortunately for me, because I don't think he's the right coach, but that's what I think just happened.
Yeah, it could be. And I go back to 1983. I think Glenn Ordway and I are the only two guys that remember 1983. Bill Fitch got fired. The Celtics got swept by the Milwaukee Bucks in the second round of the playoffs. Fitch had been there 4 years, had won an NBA championship, but all of the players, with the exception of Larry Bird, grew tired of him. Red Auerbach realized that, elevated Casey Jones from assistant coach to head coach, and they won a championship the very next year. It also helped that they traded Rick Roby for Dennis Johnson, one of the all-time steals in NBA history. Red Auerbach was a master of that. But yeah, I think he may have saved his job. We'll see what the effort is on Thursday night at TD Garden. And again, you know, would it surprise me if Miami comes in and wins? No, Miami's 4-1 against the Celtics the last two postseasons at TD Garden. I have no clue why the Celtics don't perform well at home. It makes no sense, because we saw that poll from The Athletic. Among NBA players, they say it's the toughest place to play, maybe in the regular season, but certainly not in the postseason.
Yeah. Sap, we got about 5 minutes left here. So before we exit, a couple of coaching rumors to talk about as other teams are trying to figure out how they can get to where these teams are next year. The Phoenix Suns have narrowed their head coaching list to a final four of three guys who have won a championship. Nick Nurse, Frank Vogel, and Doc Rivers. The other one is Jordy Fernandez. Sap, do you think that any of those coaches are a good fit for the Suns?
Well, I think you have to wonder, is Chris Paul coming back to Phoenix or not? I don't know what the relationship is with Chris Paul and Doc Rivers.
I thought it was bad. That's what I
think.
It's soured.
Yeah, it's soured, because Doc is a former point guard, and sometimes the head coach, as the former point guard, will battle his own point guards. We know that with Doc and Rajon Rondo, right? I mean, they went at it from time to time. Well, Rondo kind of went at it with everybody except Kevin Garnett. He loved Garnett and he loved Pierce, but, you know, he would go at it with Ray Allen among most. But yeah, I think my suggestion for Doc, if he's listening, and I like Doc a lot, take a year off, collect $8 million from the Philadelphia 76ers, get that back of yours fixed, because you're in agony. You got plenty of money. He's making plenty of money flipping houses in Southern California. You're still only 62. So take a year off and you can resurface next year when there's going to be other opportunities available. I don't know what the relationship is with Chris Paul. I don't know, is Chris Paul coming back? But I think at some point, Kevin Durant, Devin Booker, and if Chris Paul's coming back, will have a big say in who the next head coach of the Phoenix Suns will be. They also have a new owner, Matt Ishbia, who was a walk-on on Michigan State's 2000 national championship team. He has just enough knowledge of basketball that he's dangerous, right? Because he probably paints himself as a basketball expert the way Jerry Jones paints himself.
Maybe he'll go
as a football expert.
Try to get Tom Izzo from Michigan State. Maybe his old coach.
Yeah, I'm not sure if Izzo would fit in the NBA. I don't think. I think he's best suited staying in Flint, Michigan. Look, that was rumored a decade ago with the Cleveland Cavaliers because Dan Gilbert is a Michigan State grad and still has ties to Michigan State and is close with Tom Izzo and thought about bringing Tom Izzo in to coach the Cavaliers when LeBron was there, and it just didn't materialize. Doc Rivers would make sense. I think Nick Nurse makes sense. He's won a championship, right? And I think he worked well with his point guards in Toronto, whether it was Kyle Lowry, Van Fleet, who's kind of more of a lead guard than a point guard. So he could be an obvious option. Vogel maybe doesn't have as much a cachet because he won his title with LeBron and Davis, Anthony right. Davis. So the coaches don't generally get credit when LeBron wins titles, nor should they generally, because he's won with three different coaches. But I think that he would make some sense too. But Nick Nurse to me would make the most sense. But again, it's probably going to come down to Kevin Durant. And also one other thing they're going to have to look at is which one of these coaches can unlock DeAndre Ayton. Because look, he's a tough guy to trade. You can't trade him for draft picks because you're in a win-now situation. What coach is going to get the most out of DeAndre Ayton? That's going to be a big question mark going forward.
Yeah, and I don't think coaching was the issue for Phoenix Suns the past couple of years.
No.
So I don't know that it's going to solve any problems that they had. As far as the other premier opening right now, it's the Milwaukee Bucks, and their list is pretty much the same. Sap, Nick Nurse, Frank Vogel. I don't think they've talked to Doc Rivers, but I'm sure they've put out feelers. And Kenny Atkinson's another guy.
Mm-hmm.
And then people are waiting to see what happens with the Celtics job. So a lot of job rumors and stuff. We'll have you covered on all the latest there. But we'll be focusing on the rest of the Eastern Conference Finals and then eventually the NBA Finals. So make sure you check out the Pick and Roll NBA podcast with Jet and Sap all the time, thanks to full press coverage. Make sure you check out our social medias too for updates on the show and opinions on what's going on right now or anytime at JohnSapp25, at Jet Stryer. And we'll be back later talking more basketball, talking more Eastern Conference Finals, NBA Finals, coaching rumors, all sorts of good stuff. So thanks for listening, everybody. See ya.